Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. On the show tonight, multiple developments in the fight against COVID. The gap between Covishield doses can be extended up to 16 weeks, says the government. Is this because we just don't have enough vaccines in the first place? Concerns on Sputnik, which is going to be available next week, that's been raised by scientists in the writing in the Lancet publication. That's a premier medical journal. Also, what the World Health Organization has to say on whether the vaccines work on the strain first detected in India. There are new details on that as well. Also on the show tonight, Dr. Devi Sridhar, Professor and Chair of the Global Public Health Edinburgh University Medical School, on the spread of the B1716 variant. That's the variant of COVID first found in India. It's now there in more than 40 countries and is going to become the fastest or the most widely distributed in the United Kingdom. It's already the fastest growing strain. Now, this is the second time the government has increased the interval. It's presently recommended between 6 and 8 weeks. Now, the government says the move is based on real-life evidence of the efficacy of the vaccine. In fact, it's a move backed by the Serum Institute's Adar Poonawalla, who's told us this is a very good move because this is based on data that the government received, on the basis of which they made a good scientific decision to increase the gap. Now, the medical journal Lancet seems to back the move. In a report earlier this year, Lancet said, supporting a longer interval immunization strategy, vaccine efficacy was significantly higher at 81.3% after two standard doses given at an interval of 12 weeks or longer. Now, the move clearly helps the government ensure that more citizens can get their first jab at a time when vaccines are in short supply, though it's still unclear when more people would actually get vaccinated at the numbers we need them. What the government says today is that between August and December, over 2 billion doses could be made available of 8 types of vaccine, including the Sputnik vaccine, which goes on sale next week. Now, we may have the vaccines, but actually administering them at the rate that needs to be done, that's a different story altogether. But that said, as far as Sputnik is concerned, there are concerns. Lancet has said, notwithstanding the previous issues and lack of transparency, the interim results from phase 3 trials of the Sputnik vaccine again raise serious concerns. Now, these allegations have been countered by Russian scientists who say clear and transparent regulatory standards exist for the provision of clinical trial data. All of this comes on a day in which the World Health Organization has raised perhaps the most important query of all. How well do the existing vaccines work on the variant of COVID called B1617, first discovered in India, now present in more than 40 countries? So the WHO says, and this is very new, preliminary laboratory studies awaiting peer review suggest a limited reduction in neutralization by antibodies. In other words, the vaccines are less effective than they were or are on the original strain for which they were designed in the first place. All right, so there's lots to discuss. Firstly, vaccination. You could, between 12 and 16 weeks now, the second time the government has changed it. As far as Covishield is concerned, Covaxin, the interval between the first dose and the second dose remains 4 weeks. That's one. Then the concerns over Sputnik and, of course, whether or not the existing vaccines work effectively against the variant of COVID first detected in India. Joining us now, Dr. V. Ramasubramanian. He is a consultant with infectious diseases and tropical medicine at Apollo Hospitals. Dr. Arvinder Soin of Medanta joins us as well. Also, Anirban Mahapatra is a microbiologist and author of COVID-19 Separating Fact from Fiction. I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us. Dr. Soin, as far as 12 to 16 weeks as the interval between the first and second doses is concerned of Covishield, is that something that makes sense scientifically?
There was a recent publication in the Lancet which said that when they compared populations of people who received the two doses at gaps of 4, 6, 8, 10, and 12 or more weeks, the efficacy increased after 8 weeks, and the initial recommendation of extending the interval between two doses to 6 to 8 weeks was based on that. But because there is evidence in a small population of 2,000 patients of it being more effective at 12 or more weeks, this recommendation is pretty sound. However, the period beyond 12 weeks was not very clearly specified. So one would have been scientifically slightly more comfortable with 12 weeks, that means 3 months rather than 16 weeks. But I think from a public health point of view, and given the limited stock of vaccines we have at present, this makes sense.
Dr. Ramasubramaniam, the science seemed to fall into place for us. We don't have the vaccines available, and apparently it works even after more weeks, right, as a gap. So this sort of fit into our present problem, no vaccines.
Yes, actually studies, it was a serendipitous discovery that the initial interval for the Covishield vaccine, which was 4 weeks, they found when they analyzed the data that the longer you delay, this delay happened in the study because of reasons of non-availability and difficulty in accessing the vaccine in certain parts of the world where the study was done. But when they looked at the data, they found that delaying the vaccine up to 12 weeks actually was better than giving it in 4 weeks. So yes, and in the current situation in India where we are having a shortage of vaccines, this is a useful intervention to do. But again, as Dr. Soin said, increasing it from 12 to 16 weeks has a little bit of confusion. The studies where neutralization assays were done in the blood said that the benefit was actually even better. Efficacy improved up to 16 weeks. So it does help. But when you looked at the clinical picture in the Lancet study, they found that the efficacy actually in people dropped a little bit after 12 weeks. So between 12 and 16 weeks, there may be a slight drop, even though the lab studies said otherwise. So in a situation like we are in today, it does make sense definitely to increase it to definitely 12 weeks.
And even the bottom line over here is that in as much as we can spread out Covishield dosages, at the present rate of vaccination, we aren't going to get anywhere close to our target group for more than a year, right? So if the government, which actually today announced that between August and December, they're going to have 2 billion additional doses of vaccines, most probably, if the others are all accepted, that's great in terms of numbers. But in terms of administration, at the present rate of administration, we would need to step this up by what, 10 times to get this over and people vaccinated in the next 5-6 months, which realistically in India is possibly is impossible. What are your thoughts on that, Anirban?
I agree, because vaccines themselves don't save lives. It's basically vaccinations that save lives. So you have to get the shots in people's arms. As the two doctors before me just said, that the Lancet study is basically a landmark study. That was the study that was used by the United Kingdom to say that they were vindicated in increasing their dosage as well, the interval from 4 weeks to 12 weeks, which they've done. And that's actually increased the protection in that country as well. Dr. Ramasubramaniam also said, that it also increases the amount of antibodies as well. So that's definitely one step in the right direction, increasing the dosages. The second I would say to get more people is this recommendation for people who have already been infected. There are studies that say that people who have been infected and are seropositive and have that positive antibody response, that they are actually protected for 7 months or more. There was a study out of Qatar which looked at over 43,000 people and said reinfections are rare at 0.3%. So if we take these pool of people and then we now start to prioritize the people who will actually get their first jabs first, that puts us on a clear path towards getting more people immunized, vaccinated in an orderly manner.
Dr. Soin, is it about time that we started focusing on the relative efficacy of the existing vaccines against the strain which was first detected in India, B.1.7.1.6? Because the World Health Organization seems to indicate now that there is a possibility, and this is non-peer-reviewed, that the existing vaccines will be less effective. They've then gone on to say that certain studies have indicated that it would be far less effective, while others have indicated perhaps it would still be reasonably effective. As we go forward in this fight, how important is it for us to look at the vaccines we have and really figure out if it works the way we need it to?
So I have two things to say about that. One is that in the laboratory, Covaxin at least has been shown to be effective against most variants that have been infecting our population. And the second thing I would say is that in the real world, in the second wave, we have had several breakthrough infections among people who have been vaccinated, even those who have had two doses. But the incidence of severe disease and death is still very rare. I mean, I myself have been infected twice, and the second time was a month after my second dose, but I had mild infection. So most of the infections after vaccinations have been mild. I mean, there have been occasional cases of severe infection, even death, but they have been pretty rare. So I would go with the Covaxin and Covishield vaccines, which have been given to crores of people. And I think that the news that 130 crores would be available sometime in the next 5 to 7 months is a very good one. So we have been manufacturing the world's 60% of world's vaccines. And I think if we continue to do that down the line, that augurs well for us. But I think that the whole, you know, I wish this whole thing had been kind of now until August, September, rather than from August until December. So it'd
exactly.
Be three or four months, a bit, you know, too late. And we might just face the third wave. It might be as ferocious as this one. And that's what we have to get ready for now.
Dr. Ramasubramanian, do you have any concerns about what Lancet has said in the last 24 hours or so on Sputnik? It's now being rolled out in India, perhaps from next week. But the data submitted for their phase 3 trials has been questioned. Their scientists have responded and have said, no, it's okay. But in a situation like this, do you believe we should take pause or we should proceed with it?
See, I think this is a rapidly evolving situation. We cannot have the perfect plan in place which is going to last the next 6 months. So we need to think on our feet. Based on the current evidence, the shortage of vaccines, the vaccine hesitancy which people have had, the occurrence of an earlier opening out of the vaccine for younger population, all this has been a huge challenge, especially if you understand that India is a massive country. We are looking at over 1 billion people. So you need to make changes which may always not be very, very perfect. The second thing you need to understand is the vaccine studies give us information. The studies done in the laboratory regarding the neutralization antibodies against the variants, all that give an idea about what may happen. For example, we say that in the study, it is the vaccine efficacy, but in real life, we call it vaccine effectiveness. And there can be a discord between the two. It will not always be the case that the 95% benefit you get, for example, with Pfizer may completely be true in real life also. There are so many other factors which come into play in real life situation. So I think we have to come up with, just like we have the emergency use authorization of drugs and vaccines, which may not have been completely well studied. Regarding with this also, we probably need to evolve as we progress. And I would agree with the current understanding that extending the duration and probably getting ahead with vaccinating as many people as possible during this stage is more important than waiting to get the perfect mix of the vaccine, the dose and the timing.
All right, I'd like to thank all three of you very much for joining us. Lots of important developments in the fight against COVID. The bigger concern, as we've been speaking about, is the spread, not just in India, but around the world, of B1716. That's the COVID variant, which was first detected in India. It's now very transmissible in the United Kingdom and will likely become the dominant strain of the virus in the United Kingdom. For the impact of this in the United Kingdom and what exactly we know so far of this particular strain, I spoke earlier on to Dr. Devi Sridhar, Professor and Chair of the Global Public Health Department at the Edinburgh University of Medicine. B1617, as the World Health Organization calls it, the variant of COVID which was first discovered in India is now seen in more than 40 countries around the world. It is a variant of concern, and the spread of this variant and its transmissibility is a cause of huge concern, not least of all in the United Kingdom, where there are now studies and epidemiological tests going on to try and get an idea of just what the potential impact of this may be. Joining us now to talk about this and a couple of other key issues is Professor Devi Sridhar. Thanks very much, Devi, for being with us today. Firstly, what is the evidence at the moment to suggest greater transmissibility of B1617 in the United Kingdom?
Well, they sequence 10% of positive cases, and of those, they chart them. And what we have seen is B117, or the British variant that I know India also has now, is quite transmissible and the dominant strain. but we're starting to see it become less of a percentage of positive cases and B1617 increase. So the lines, and this is not just in Britain, it's across countries, is that it's just upwards. It's becoming more and more dominant, which means it's outcompeting the other strains that we have here.
And is there a sense, therefore, that it could be more dangerous as well? We know it's very highly transmissible from all the evidence in India, but is it more dangerous?
I don't think we know that yet because we haven't had enough cases. Luckily, our cases per 100,000 are extremely low, and we have a lot of people vaccinated. Over 50s have all been offered their vaccines. But we have a worry that even with the older type, the wild type, we know people in their 30s and 40s still need oxygen, they need fluids, they need support. So we would still have to have restrictions in place to slow the spread and try to stop it. So there's a concern, even if it's not more severe, about how do we manage even if it's equally as severe.
And therefore, with the United Kingdom now planning to get rid of the curbs, which have been in place now for a long period of time, where is the analysis now heading? I mean, can it be done in the next couple of days as originally planned?
Well, they're having a meeting later today of scientific advisors to look at the modeling. So what has happened is they estimate what they think the projections are based on the transmissibility. And actually, given releasing all these restrictions, so now, let's say, indoor bars are open, pubs, gyms, gatherings are going ahead. You can now go into each other's homes. A lot of those restrictions are being lifted just at the time that we're seeing this variant. So it's quite a precarious position. We still have a lot of people under 50 not vaccinated. I think there's less of a concern about the over 50s. It's about the under 50s now.
And what do we know about the efficacy of the existing vaccines on this strain?
Especially the mRNA ones, Pfizer and Moderna. They are saying that actually we have not seen any variant emerge that has evaded our vaccines. Our vaccines have been offered protection. So that's quite optimistic. I hope that's the case. We're also seeing signals, and I know this is true in India as well, of people who have been vaccinated with one or two doses coming into hospital. So you have to understand how much of that is, what percentage of it, what vaccine is it? Is this a fluke? And I think we don't yet know yet. They're still trying to assess that.
How soon before this does become the dominant strain in the United Kingdom at this rate?
Well, it's hard to say, but I can tell you that B117, you know, went from being, you know, 5% of cases within weeks to over 90% of cases. And so we just saw how fast, and that's happened across Europe and across the United States. And we are also seeing in India, several states have B117 as a dominant strain. And so I think we are looking at right now, it could be, you know, a matter of weeks before this becomes a dominant one, if it is going to have the chance to keep spreading.
Now, there's a great deal of hindsight, obviously, available for this. And if you look at the example of the United Kingdom itself, when your hospitals in the UK were completely flooded with patients, oxygen was a problem, doctors had to make difficult choices. The UK went into a lockdown which stretched for more than 3 months, and you vaccinated. And that is the only way you fought off B117, right? Now this has emerged. It's similar in many ways. Therefore, is the thinking not to continue with the lockdown as it were?
Well, I think we're
in a better position. Is there any other way is my question?
Yeah, well, I think the only way is surge testing. So what they are now doing is having mass testing being brought in and trying to identify anyone who has the virus and having them isolated home. I think the only way through this, if you don't want restrictions, is isolating people quickly who have the virus or have been exposed. I don't know if people are willing to do restrictions again. I think there's a lot of fatigue, a lot of idea of we're finally through this. We were told vaccines were the end game. So I think right now it's a careful balance of vaccinating fast enough that we can release restrictions slowly. And it's the balance has changed now with the new variant.
Are you happy with what you're seeing so far from large pharma companies on bringing out specific variants which are strain specific or which can actually handle the mutations we are now seeing? We've seen quite a few variants of concern. Somehow that doesn't seem to be very much in conversation.
Well, they are trying. I know Pfizer and Moderna can create boosters really quickly, but it's a bit of a cat and mouse game, right? Are we going to chase every single variant there is? Then you have to vaccinate everyone against it, which we know is the difficulty as well. Getting the vaccine was half the battle. The other half was getting enough doses and getting them out to people, as we've seen, you know, in India, where, you know, you have the technology. It's just making enough doses, supply, and then getting them out to people into their arms. So I think that's the worry, that we can develop the boosters. It's can we get them out fast enough to people if we have to keep redeveloping them? But there was a really promising study in Nature which shows a pan-coronavirus vaccine. So one that could cover not just SARS-CoV-2 and all of its strains, but also MERS and the original SARS, broad scale protection, and it seemed very promising. So I think that's where we might be heading, actually, to more universal broad scale protection, because we also know there might be other coronaviruses emerging in the next couple of years. So we have to plan for those also.
You know, Lancet has in just the last 24 hours or so come out with a couple of reports on Sputnik. One of the reports said that the data which had been presented earlier on was not good enough and that there needed to be more clarification. And then they've published another one where, you know, a lot of Russian scientists associated with the vaccine have said, no, this is why we believe it's right. What are your observations on this so far?
Well, I think to get to the heart is you need trust and trust over the data. And how you get trust over the data in science is peer review and transparency. So you show your results to other scientists and they scrutinize them. They look for mistakes. They look for any errors. And based on that scrutiny, does it pass the bar of approval? And that's how you've had approval in the States for, let's say, Pfizer with the FDA. That's how the WHO has had its approval processes. And I think there's concerns with this vaccine that there hasn't been enough transparency on what the findings are. It's a very tricky balance. Usually with medicines, you don't have this kind of emergency need. So a few more weeks, a few more months, you can take your time. But I think now we're seeing emergency approvals because we know if we can't get vaccines out fast enough, people will die. It's a race against time.
Yep.
And that creates real pressure for scientists to get the data out quickly and to get approval quickly because the choice is, do you want COVID or the vaccine? And I think that's what we're seeing here. It's not clear cut, but it is undermining confidence in the Sputnik vaccine.
Yeah. But that said, peer reviews, particularly from world-class journals, are the basis of science and certainly of medicine. So how is it so important to balance, you know, peer reviews with the need to get the vaccine, including in India, where Sputnik is supposed to be rolled out very soon? How do you balance the two together? Because on the ground, in all the countries where it's been introduced, it does appear to work. So who makes that choice? You know, I mean, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a really tough one. It's government regulatory agencies. We're seeing this debate right now with the AstraZeneca vaccine as well and what age groups it should be given to, given the risk of blood clots. So obviously, if your choice is getting no vaccine, but you can live in a COVID-free world.
Right. Just one final question. If you talk about children, and I know that Pfizer has been cleared for children in a certain age group. In fact, you know, that's so important. Over here in India, we're going to be starting trials with Covaxin or Bharat Biotech. Is that a real worry that the progress which a large part of the world would have hoped for children is not there? Pfizer is unaffordable for large parts of the world. And therefore, this huge group of citizens of our planet are going to be unvaccinated for a very long period of time. And you know, there was a lot of hope on AZ, AstraZeneca, but the from what I hear, it's going to take some more time.
Yes, exactly. I think this is the next horizon, which is getting this vaccine out to younger age groups. So Pfizer has been approved in the United States, and New York City is rolling it out to age 12 to 15. Now they're starting trials, even of Moderna and stuff, down to 6 months. But of course, they're too expensive for large parts of the world. But hopefully it can pave the way. We need to have these trials ongoing. We need to be thinking of vaccinating children because we don't know what the next variant might emerge. We don't know what's on next on the horizon. So you want to be prepared with a vaccine to offer children protection as well, which is what we do against a range of diseases. Usually we vaccinate kids when they're quite young.
And just one final question to you. I know that I said the last one was the final one, but I promise you this one is. What are your thoughts on generic branding of anti-COVID medication and of vaccines? This is a process now at the WHO which has started. India and South Africa championing this, the United States having backed that process. It is going to take time. That said, do you believe that this is the right way to go in the context of a global emergency?
Yes, definitely. I think we have seen this before in global emergencies. Think of HIV. And I think actually at a certain point, the question is how much profit is enough for pharma? When do they say we've made enough money? And I think the bar here is not saying pharma doesn't need to make money. Of course they need to make money. But when does that, where's that bar? Where you say, actually, now you've made enough, you've recouped it, you've made much more for your stakeholders. Now you need to think about people losing their lives. But it's not just IP that's the issue now, I think. It's about manufacturing capacity, tech transfer. So actually there's the know-how to do it, you know, making the facilities, having the human resources. So I think there's a couple things. Just releasing the IP rights isn't enough. It's actually quite a few things, but it's definitely an important step. And I'm happy to see the U.S. also support India and South Africa in that.
Professor Devi Sridhar, wonderful speaking to you as always. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.